Don't do it at all. Please.
Okay, so guys, if you would, typically, because I want the scripture to always be around us, typically the scripture would be in the bulletin. The passage that we are going through today is much too long for me to put in a bulletin. I tried, and at around 5 points on the font, I decided, I'm having a lot of trouble reading this, and I am in bright light and have almost magnifying glasses. So if you would, there are Bibles around you. Hopefully you have your own. If not, there's a phone. If you have it, you can look it up. It's going to appear behind me, and I'm also going to be reading it. So we're going to be looking at the 18th chapter of 1 Kings, verses 16 all the way through the end. So this is what the word of the Lord says. So Obadiah went to meet Ahab and told him, and Ahab went to meet Elijah. When he saw Elijah, he said to him, "Is that you, you troubler of Israel?" "I have not made trouble for Israel," Elijah replied, "but you and your father's family have. You have abandoned the Lord's commands and have followed the Baals. Now summon the people from all over Israel to meet me on Mount Carmel, and bring the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah and who eat at Jezebel's table." So Ahab sent word throughout all Israel and assembled the prophets on Mount Carmel. Elijah went before the people and said, "How long will you waver between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal is God, follow him." But the people said nothing. Then Elijah said to them, "I am the only one of the Lord's prophets left, but Baal has 450 prophets. Get two bulls for us. Let Baal's prophets choose one for themselves and let them cut it into pieces and put it on the wood, but not set fire to it. I will prepare the other bull and put it on the wood, but not set fire to it. Then you call on the name of your God, and I will call on the name of the Lord. The God who answers by fire, he is God." Then all the people said, "What you say is good." Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, "Choose one of the bulls and prepare it first, since there are so many of you. Call on the name of your God, but do not light the fire." So they took the bull given them and prepared it. Then they called on the name of Baal from morning till noon. "Baal, answer us," they shouted. But there was no response. No one answered. And they danced around the altar they had made. At noon, Elijah began to taunt them. "Shout louder," he said. "Surely he is a god. Perhaps he is in deep thought, or busy, or traveling. Maybe he is sleeping and must be awakened." So they shouted louder and slashed themselves with swords and spears, as was their custom, until the blood flowed. Midday passed, and they continued their frantic prophesying until the time for the evening sacrifice. But there was no response. No one answered them. No one paid attention. Then Elijah said to all the people, "Come here to me." They came to him, and he repaired the altar of the Lord, which had been torn down. Elijah took 12 stones, one for each of the tribes descended from Jacob, to whom the word of the Lord had come, saying, "Your name shall be Israel." With the stones, he built an altar in the name of the Lord, and he dug a trench around it, large enough to hold two sheaves of seed. He arranged the wood, cut the bull into pieces, and laid it on the wood. Then he said to them, "Fill four large jars with water and pour it on the offering and on the wood. Do it again," he said, and they did it again. "Do it a third time," he ordered, and they did it the third time. The water ran down around the altar and even filled the trench. At the time of the sacrifice, the prophet Elijah stepped forward and prayed, "Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known today that you are God in Israel, and that I am your servant and have done all these things at your command. Answer me, Lord, answer me so that these people will know that you, Lord, are God and that you are turning their hearts back again. Then the fire of the Lord fell and burned up the sacrifice, the wood, the stones, and the soil, and also licked up the water in the trench. When all the people saw this, they fell prostrate and cried, "The Lord, He is God! The Lord, He is God!" Then Elijah commanded them, "Seize the prophets of Baal. Don't let anyone get away." They seized them, and Elijah had them brought down to the Kishon Valley and slaughtered there. And Elijah said to Ahab, "Go, eat and drink, for there is the sound of a heavy rain." So Ahab went off to eat and drink, but Elijah climbed down, climbed to the top of Carmel, bent down to the ground, and put his face between his knees. "Go and look towards the sea," he told his servant. And he went up and looked. "There's nothing there," he said. Seven times Elijah said, "Go back." The seventh time the servant reported, "A cloud as small as a man's hand is rising from the sea." So Elijah said, "Go and tell Ahab, hitch up your chariot and go down before the rain stops you." Meanwhile, the sky grew black with clouds. The wind rose. A heavy rain started falling, and Ahab rode off to Jezreel. The power of the Lord came on Elijah, and tucking his cloak in his belt, he ran ahead of Ahab all the way to Jezreel. Guys, we have been doing a Jesse tree to remember. So I've been asking people to make ornaments. I've loved Kate's. Actually, I haven't looked at your wood burning one yet. Did you do one for today? Okay. So I haven't looked at it yet, but I've loved that. It was fun when I didn't know it was, it was still fun when I did know you, but it's like, wow, I didn't know, I thought it was a kid actually at first. I was like, that's pretty impressive. But we do this as a reminder because there's so many things that we need to remember. One of my favorite movies is a movie called Excalibur from the 70s. Does anybody remember? Some of us are at the right age where you might. It's about King Arthur, and I love it for two reasons. One, I love it when Merlin forms the round circle. And the reason he forms the round circle is he basically says, it is the danger of men that they forget. And the whole reason I love that is because I remember all the time, I don't remember all the times because I forget them. I remember how often it is that I say I'm never going to forget something. This matters something. And how quickly I forget it. All the promises that I make where I say, I'm going to remember this. I have lots of little mementos, little Ebenezers, because an Ebenezer is just something that says thus far as God brought me. I have all of these little Ebenezers from significant moments in my life, and the reality is some of them, I don't remember what they are. I have boxes full of these things because I forget just so easily. We do the Jesse tree as a way of remembering again. One, also because I like the kids coloring, so some of it's just selfish there. I like them coloring things, and I want them to think church is enjoyable, which is why I was trying to pass out peppermints also today. It may also be that parents, I'm just getting back at you guys because peppermints are like the messiest candy ever, and I didn't think about that before I gave it to your kids, and I'm sorry. I was reminded of that when somebody's face started showing remnants of candy cane. Yes, Miss Joanne, I am talking about you, and the fact that your face now matches your dress, skirt, I don't know what it was, but like you're wearing a red dress, and your face matches that now. I think the only reason she looks neat right now is because it's dark in here. I could be wrong. I just remember outside. Guys, we do this as a reminder, and I know this doesn't sound like a Christmas story to a large extent. I mean, the reality is we just talked about sacrificing a bull. But the reason I wanted to use it here is for years as a church, we have focused on a thing that a lot of churches have been doing called Advent Conspiracy. And the reason they've done it is it's not a program. It's four little simple things. Because these three pastors reached a point where they said, I can't stand Christmas. I love Christmas. It's doing it in church. Because so often the things that we do in order to remember something actually end up distracting us from remembering it. And so these pastors came back and they were like, we want to do four things during Christmas. That is, we want to worship fully. We want everything we do to be about worshiping God. We want to spend less because we feel like it's not really Christ-honoring for us to go into debt over Christmas. We want to do that while we give more. In other words, not get all grinchy. Like, I've known people who would be thrilled about spending less because they didn't want to give anything to begin with. They want to give more. And the way they say it so often is, we want to give gifts of our presence rather than just a present. And they want to do it in such a way to love all. And we've talked through all of these things. But that story that I just read, that historical event that I just read, I think it has everything to do with love. And the reason it has everything to do with love, well, I kind of wish I'd worn my coat that has patches on it, because I want to get professorial for just a second. And I want us to talk about ancient Near Eastern physics. Okay, I'd love this. Okay, I've been reading another book on Augustine this week, and he was talking about, he has this very famous saying he's got quite a few favorite sayings, but one of them is, my weight is my love, and we're going to hit on that again. And it's kind of a weird saying, but it comes from the physics that he was dealing with at the time. And the physics in the ancient Near East were Aristotelian physics, so Aristotle, and he came up with this mindset of, it's actually kind of ingenious, there are four different elements, and the different elements have different weights. Now, sometimes we look back on the ancients, and for some reason we think they're stupid, which is just wrong, okay? It's just weird, because one of the geniuses of this is, what he would have said was, all right, so earth is the heaviest of all elements, and fire is the lightest of all elements. And if you think about our periodic table, the only difference here is that we have more elements and they have more weight, because we're going to say that there are things that are heavier, and they're at, you know, the bottom of the periodic table. They have a higher, what's the number called? Neutronic number? Neutron number? Atomic number. Thank you very much. There we go. Atomic number. And your lighter, your ones that are at the beginning of the table, are going to have a lighter atomic number. And what are they going to want to do? Come on. You remember high school science?
I actually loved physics.
Oh, did you? Okay. All right. Did you make it? When did we learn the periodic table? Just so you know, I took a college course that basically the only thing we did was the periodic table. It was the simplest, wimpiest course that I ever took in college. It was called Science and Its Role in Society. I took it as a senior because I remembered I need to take one more science course. And you're a senior. You don't want to take anything else. Only thing I remember learning from it is that Tide detergent was created by two scientists at the University of Alabama, which is why it's called Tide. That's the only thing I remember. All right, but think about our periodic tables. Helium is one, if I remember right. Is that accurate? And what does helium want to do? Float, because it's light. I mean, we look at the ancients and we think of them as stupid, but Aristotle was saying there are four things and they vary in weight, and what they want to do is be at rest. Everything's made of combinations of these four things. So there's a continuum that forms it. And where you are in relation to up and down comes down to what your weight is. And if something is at its wrong level weight-wise, it wants to go down or go up to whatever its weight was. So let's think about this for just a second. Jermaine, can I use you for just a second? Okay, can you pretend to be a rock? Okay. That's pretty good, but I'm going to get you to come up here, okay, for just a second. And I'm going to get you to stand up. You're a rock that can stand, okay? All right, so on the count of three, you're going to jump, okay? And I'm going to lift you up. I don't have parent strength anymore, so I probably can't hold you up, because parents, for some reason, develop these weird muscles that you never use at any other time in your life, okay? All right, you ready? One, two, three. Hey, I can't hold you up. Okay, so if she's a rock and I release her, what does she want to do? But yes, she doesn't want to do that, because if I release her and she drops, it's going to hurt. But we're going to pretend like it. So you're a rock. You ready? I'm not going to really release you. Ready? One, two, three. Boom. She hits. Aristotle would have said that because of the fact that she's a rock, she wants to go down. And when you hold that rock at a spot that it is not meant to be because of its weight, it causes dissonance for it. Okay? It wants to fall. Now, if we could do open flames here, which we can't because the city says we cannot have an open flame in the gym. And with my history with fire, that's probably not a bad thing. I have burned off at least one eyebrow at least 3 different times. I definitely burned all the hair off this side of my body one time and called all the neighbors out of the house. It was pretty awesome. You know it's good when you're lighting the leaves and they go boom. Fire wants to go up. It's the whole thing that he was saying on this was that what your weight is determines where you want to be. Now, Aristotle influenced Augustine. You may know him as Augustine or Augustine. Both pronunciations are actually correct. He's from Hippo. He's from northern Africa, which is weird to us, but in the Roman Empire, it's kind of the equivalent of the Bible Belt. It was the most religious section, the most conservative section. It was the wheat belt of Rome. And Augustine, probably one of the best known thinkers and most influential thinkers of Western civilization, not just Christianity. And he was heavily influenced by this physics. And when he talked about my weight is my love, well, what he was saying is the thing that you love influences the way you're going to react. The things that we love influence the way we live our lives. You may say one thing is important to you, but the reality is if you love something else, it's going to shape the way you live. That's why I used the story today, because King Ahab, he spoke the right language, but he loved the wrong God. And it influenced the way he lived. You will see this reference every now and then in Judges. You'll see it in Kings where it talks about doing evil in the sight of the Lord. But Ahab and his wife Jezebel did tremendous amounts of evil in the sight of the Lord. And it just didn't affect them religiously. It affected all of their lives. There was an unjust society that was happening at the time. Because when you love a God who loves justice, it turns you towards justice. When you love a God who is peace, it turns you towards peace. When you love a God who is joy in himself, it turns you towards joy. And when we love other things, it becomes destructive to us and destructive to all around us. Your weight is your love. That's why we see so many people celebrate Christmas, that Jesus is not who is most important to them, and they celebrate Christmas in ways that have Jesus-y tinge to them. They have Jesus-y terminology to them, but it doesn't celebrate Christmas in a way that actually glorifies God. You see, Mount Carmel was a battle. It was a battle between who would be God. Would Baal and Asherah, and just so you know the terminology there, Baal and Asherah were fertility gods. Baal was the male god, Asherah was the female god. And the way worship took place was, it's fertility. We have kids in the room, so I'm just going to let you think through that. But basically the whole mindset was you wanted to encourage them to make the land fertile. That's why there were temple prostitutes and such. It was the equivalent of pornography for gods. It was just this weird thing. But it affected things in the sense of the relationship you had with Baal was completely transactional. You give to him, therefore he gives to you. And it affected all of Israel society. Suddenly they began to do things where it was like, I can have slaves, which is just really weird when you think about the history of the Jews. They had been slaves and they'd been set free by God who wanted to set them free, and then suddenly they start having slaves. They had all been slaves, and then suddenly they're set free from a God who says there will be no poor among you, and then Israel begins to mistreat the poor. They chose the wrong God, and your weight is your love, so they began to act like a God who takes advantage of people. They began to act like a God who demands, if you want rain, then you have to do this. If you want food, then you have to give me this. They began to act like a God who is the exact opposite of justice and love and joy. Because when you love the wrong thing, it drags you towards the wrong thing. And Yahweh, the God of hope, the God of joy, the God of peace, when they loved Him, they lived out a life that was entirely different. They lived out a faith that had what was known as the year of Jubilee in it. Year of Jubilee being the 50th year, because what would happen is you would have a Sabbath every 7 days, so on Saturday, and on that day you rested, and what it was meant by rest was trust. Was literally you said, I trust that God will take care of things today. I won't work. And then every seventh year you had a Sabbath year, which is just this earth-shaking to me, because you had farmers who were saying, this year I'm not going to work the land because I trust that God will meet my needs. And then every seven Sabbaths, the 49th year, the year after that was what was known as the year of Jubilee. And suddenly people said, what we're going to do is we're going to take one third of everything that's been grown, and we're going to basically have a party, and we're going to forgive all debts, and we're going to set all slaves free. Can you imagine what our country would be? Can you imagine the mass joy that would happen in society if suddenly, like next year, we said, guess what? It's the year of Jubilee. All debts are forgiven. My case, many of you know, I'm very excited about the thought of paying off our mortgage. And that's like 5 years from now, my mortgage is paid off. If somebody next year is like, guess what? Your mortgage is done. I got news for you. We would have just the most massive party at my house, because I would be thinking, that is 12 months mortgage that I don't have to pay next year. We can throw a party off 12 months mortgage. And I mean, my house is not great, but even my house, 12 months mortgage is going to equal a pretty fancy party. All of you are getting all the candy canes you want at that point. We're even going to spend money on getting that rotisserie chicken flavor for you, okay? I mean, you can go all out. We were joking about, you know, now you talked about a tree that you would spend $1,000 a year on because you love that tree versus trees that we don't love. And we were talking about having to trim it, and it might be a couple of $1,000, and how you wouldn't want to do that every year. If suddenly somebody forgave you, and like, well, you guys are buying a house, you'd buy that house really quickly, and the next year the debt's forgiven, you become a lot more free at that point. See, if you look at the Old Testament, God was not stupid. He actually talked about how to do that. So when you do a loan, you plan in the year of Jubilee at that point. Because the fun thing is, God's protecting not only the weak, but He's also protecting the strong. He made it, if you look at the rules of the year of Jubilee, the whole point was to make it to where neither party could take advantage of the other party. It's pretty awesome. Actually, same thing happened. There were still slaves in Israel, but they were supposed to be set free every 50th year. Because you could sell yourself into slavery to pay off debts if you had to. It was this mindset of protecting both parties. It's the beautiful thing about God is He never leaves anybody out. He wants to forgive save the victim, but also save the victimizer. He does it over and over again. Yes, because the type of God you follow should shape the way we live our lives. It's why, if you look in 1 John, it says things like this: if anyone has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? I love the fact it's a question. How can the love of God be in that? Because the reality is, if you see someone who reminds you of Jesus and you don't respond, then you should come back and think, do I actually have the love of Jesus in me? And please don't hear from this that if you don't do it. Here's what I mean. This doesn't say that He doesn't actually take care of this person. This doesn't say that He doesn't do something. It says if you don't have pity. There are plenty of times where I have not responded, but I knew that I had the need to respond. I wanted to respond. It's called conviction at that point. But if you never feel the need to respond, if you look at someone in need, if you know that someone needs help and you never feel that urge, do you really have the Messiah in you? The Messiah who came and fed the 5,000, the Messiah who came and set the blind free by giving them their sight again. See, Jesus saw people's needs and responded to it. And if we have Him as our God, it's going to shape us to where we want to begin to do that. And that's true of Christmas too. We talk about celebrating Christmas. It should affect the way we celebrate Christmas. Are you moved in love to those around you? Are you hurt when you know that there's someone alone? Now, I mess up a lot of times, okay? There are a lot of times where I hear God's small whisper, where I hear His voice and I don't respond. But I still hear His voice because of the fact that He's my God. I'm making the wrong choice at that time. I'm choosing to disobey Him, but I'm still hearing His voice. But the people of Israel, when they chose the Baals, they chose a false god who led them down a different way. We have a whole saying in the U.S. called the culture wars. You'll hear it referenced every now and then. One of the things that happens with the culture wars is the whole war on Christmas thing. And I have a love-hate relationship with the saying, keep Christ in Christmas, not in Jesus. Keep Christ in Christmas. I love it because I think we should. What I hate about it is sometimes it has very little to do with Jesus and has a lot more to do with somebody wanting to make sure that you say Christmas. My encouragement is this. This week, celebrate Christmas in a way that would make Jesus happy. I think specifically the way that would happen is when somebody around you bothers the snot out of you, that you respond to them in grace and love instead. When someone around you hurts you in some way or another, you respond in forgiveness. Because, like, I love my family, but let's face it, we all drive each other nuts after a while because the houses get really small. What seemed so large earlier is now getting tighter and tighter every day. This week, celebrate Christmas in a way that you think He would be happy. Because our weight is our love. And if you love Jesus, it's going to want to drag you towards behavior that is Jesus-like. Like a stone that wants to fall down or fire that wants to rise. If you love Jesus, He is going to drag you to where you are acting a little more like Him. That's where we find our rest. Does anybody have anything to add before I close this? Well, it's actually from the quote that's on the front of the bulletin. One of the things that Augustine or Augustine said, and it's related to physics specifically here. Would somebody share the quote?
"You made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until they rest in you."
We think of that as struggle, and it's true, but he's actually talking about physics at that point. Because what he's saying is, we were made for Him, and therefore our love should be Him. And our love is our weight. So it's again like the rock being dropped. You know when a rock stops? When it finds its right weight. Now this is not modern physics, okay? This is Aristotelian physics. Aristotle would have said that rock stops because it finally hits the right weight. If it doesn't hit the right weight, it's going to try to continue to go downward. That's how they explain gravity, okay? And fire goes up because it's trying to find the right weight.
Is it trying to find oxygen?
Well, we know that now, yes. You got to remember, this is Aristotelian physics. You just outsmarted me there, Jan. So. That just sounds smart. Let's do it like helium. If you put helium in a balloon, it goes up to a certain level and then it kind of stays around there for a while, which is why you can release balloons and they go all over the place. What he was saying at that point was, when we're not in connection with God, everything about us wants to pull. That's why we struggle, okay? We want to pull towards Him, and we don't actually find our rest, our place of peace, until we're with Him. Anybody else before I close this? Then if you will join me in prayer, and then Tegan will lead us in singing again. Father, help us to love You. Help us to love You truly and fully, knowing that when we do, it's going to shape our behavior to be a little more like You. When we do things that are not like You, convict us. When we choose things that are not you, thump us in the head. May we love you and may it shape our behavior. And in doing so, may we celebrate your Son in a way that pleases him. May we love all because he loves all. I pray this in his name. Amen. Guys, let's sing.
I feel weird not saying you can stand up if you want. No, I don't know.